Good evening. I'd like to call the Health Commission to order. I am the Vice Chair, Jean Raymond. Lynn's not able to attend tonight. So we'll start with approval of the minutes, the March 14th minutes. Did everyone have a chance to read the minutes? Any additions? Well, then they'll be accepted as written. We're now at the point where we have public comment. Is there anyone in the audience there that would like to speak about issues that are not on the schedule as scheduled items within the scope of the interest for the Health Commission? Do you have anything? No? Okay. We have a speaker here this evening that Susan Worm helped coordinate, so she's going to introduce the speaker.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce a colleague that I've worked with for many years and who I appreciate everything she does for the families and particularly the children and young children of our county. And Lisa Frazier, she's with the Center for Family Strengthening, many of you know formerly as SLOCAP, the Slow Child Abuse Prevention Program. So we're getting used to the new name, but it's still our favorite Lisa, and she's here tonight to talk to us about a very important subject, trauma-informed care.
All right. Good evening, and thank you, Susan, for this invitation to come before the Health Commission tonight. It's the Behavioral Health Commission, is that how I understand it? And I'm here to represent the partners that you see here on this slide right now. So I'm going to do a little introduction into how I came to being asked to come here this evening. It was about September when a group of individuals from our county went to the first five-state conference in Sacramento, and Sandy Miskovich, who is the maternal child adolescent health manager here for the public health department, who I work with quite closely on many projects, came back and was just quite thrilled with what she had heard about trauma-informed practices at this event. And typically when you're at a conference and you're at the final day of a three-day event and you think, oh, I'm not going to stay. I'm going to get in the car and go back to San Luis Obispo. Well, Sandy did stay for her and was just so thrilled and motivated by what she learned that she brought it back and was looking for a partner to build a conference that would focus around the area of trauma-informed practices. Well, it was a learning curve for me as well as for the committee of people that you see on the slide here tonight. I worked with the public health department, Sandy Miskovich, and I approached Don Norton of Cuesta College, who is the chair of the human development department at Cuesta College, and asked if they would sponsor a free venue for the event. And he agreed. And then the partners from Community Action Partnership, Department of Social Services, and the County of San Luis Obispo sponsored a nice sponsorship for us to help us with the assist with the cost. So to my surprise, when I pushed the button to promote this event, which is scheduled in April 15th, we have now today 300 registrants prepared, ready to come and understand what does it mean to be a trauma-informed SLOW. So what I'm going to do is just talk a little bit about what is trauma. And I pulled this information from the Prevention Institute with a report that they developed on the issue. And it was sponsored by Kaiser Permanente. And it was really helpful to me because it gave me a framework to start this conversation with the commission tonight. So policymakers, practitioners recognize the destructive effects of trauma on the health status of children and adults, including physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, neglect, discrimination, and violence. This increases an individual's long-term risk of serious physical and behavioral health problems. Now, I think we're all on the same page about that. But what we do know is that this is a definition that's not widely recognized in many organizations or the culture of the organization or even in the private practice of some individuals. So the landscape of trauma is pervasive. It does have a significant impact on the development, health, and well-being of children and adults, and it does lead to costly healthcare utilization, and it impacts the entire community. So today, the current standards look like this. Adopting trauma-informed care is becoming a standard practice. We know that it improves patient engagement, it enhances the outcomes of patients, and it also reduces excesses in cost in healthcare and social service systems. The current way today that a trauma-informed practice is utilized is based on a medical model. So how do we address and prevent community trauma? And this is really where the event that I'm here to talk to you about tonight is going to address. This is building on our local knowledge, our local expertise, and our local leadership to produce strategies that are culturally relevant and appropriate. And these are the elements that will be highlighted on April 15th, how we as a county are organized around social cultural environments, programs that connect the individual youth and adults to a supportive community. How do we in this county create physical environments that create a space for positive interaction? So for example, one of the great things about living in our county is that we have this beautiful Mission Plaza. And on Saturday, we hosted, along with my other partners, the 38th annual Children's Day in the Plaza. And if you were there, you would be totally impressed with the thousands of families that come out to get connected with resources, make connections with individuals who provide these resources. And to me, that's creating a space for positive interactions. So that would be a great example of how communities do need to think about how they create space at a policy level and at a countywide level and also within a city level. Also, improving economic conditions. Now, none of these are news flashes, I know, but this is what we know through the Prevention Institute report, that increasing student enrollment in schools and training programs, also job placement for the formerly incarcerated individuals. So these are all community-based approaches that we will be really wrapping our arms around at the event on April 15th. This is not about individual one-on-one treatment with the individual who suffers with these issues, but what are we doing in the culture of our organizations, the culture of our communities to build a trauma-informed community. So prevention is key, and I think we all know that, but addressing community trauma requires attention at the population level and consideration of what can be done to prevent trauma in the first place. So going into this particular special month that I represent today, San Luis Obispo County, I want everyone to know that we are making a difference. We are decreasing child abuse, and it has been substantiated as being decreased from 2006 to 2012, and that's a great trend to highlight. Our victories to promote these prevention efforts are parent connection. This is a project that the Center for Family Strengthening builds in this community with the partnership of other family resource centers. We work closely with the Link in Atascadero. We work closely with the adult school in San Luis Obispo Coastal School District. And we work with a safe system of care in the South County to deliver these parent education classes, to provide parent coaches, to meet the needs of the families in their communities, in their neighborhoods. Postpartum depression support is one approach that we also promote that helps women and their families adjust to the time when maybe when all the help they had at the hospital has left, and who do they turn to? And then educated and informed family members are really critical at that point. So the services we provide help to educate families and women about how to adjust during that period. Another approach would be Kids Toolbox for Personal Safety. And we, since 1988, have provided child personal safety lessons to each school in the county of San Luis Obispo. So children learn safety skills. They learn how to say no, go and tell. They learn how to assert themselves and protect themselves. In addition to that, parents are part of that. And they learn how to communicate with their children in a way that's strength-based and not a development of fear. Also in San Luis Obispo County, we produce a outreach project that goes into every high school in this county and reaches the students in their freshman year and sometimes in their sophomore year about substance use and the developing child. Because these kids have these opportunities to be in a health-focused class, and the teachers are asking us back every year, and the numbers keep increasing because they really want to instruct young people about how, when you are going to party, drink, or use any other substances, that you're at risk of being pregnant, but also the risk of the developing child being impacted. Our Promotores Collaborative is another approach to be part of this trauma-informed approach. These are the advocates in the community that are able to work alongside in health fairs, to reach out to the Spanish-speaking community. These are the individuals that are currently working with the county behavioral health department to provide mental health interpretation services at each of the clinics. This has been a year-long development on this project. We practiced it last year in South County, and we had a really great success. And so I'm now working with Patty Ford at the County Behavioral Health Department to get this part of the standard of practice in each of the clinics here in San Luis Obispo. Nurse-family partnership is another approach, which is housed at the Public Health Department, but it is required to have a community advisory board, and we bring the community together through our collaborative to make sure that nurse-family partnership gets the feedback or the focus groups that they need to inform their work. And of course, Partnership for Excellence in Family Support. We provide the venue to make sure that all the family resource centers in this county are connected, that their standard of work is practiced in a way that it's best practice as opposed to just, you know, satisfying whoever comes through the door and putting out a fire. How are we building strengths in families? How are we together training the individuals that are coming to us to serve as family advocates so they have not only the support they need, but they have the knowledge they need to be able to assist families right where they are and to help them build that plan to move forward. So this is our campaign for Child Abuse Prevention Month, and this is all tied to the work we're doing with the trauma-informed event that we're putting on April 15th. This is our spokesperson this year, Isabella. She's quite cute and she's quite happy, but at the same time, we really have had an excellent outreach this year. We've reached out to over 5,000 people on our online campaign. In addition to that, we have been featured in numerous publications in the paper, in the community. One most recently was the Neighbors publication for the Tribune. I understand that if you're a subscriber of the Tribune, you don't get it. But if you can get it, but other people get it. So I wanted to share this with the commission as well. So I want to invite you to be part of our event on April 15th at Cuesta College. It is from 8 to 4 o'clock. We are featuring Gabriella Grant, who is going to be a fantastic speaker, because I'm just so impressed with the way the community has responded to this event. To have 300 people want to be educated and informed about what a trauma-informed practices or culture is just exciting. I can say right now, of that 300, I know 30 of them are staff at the Department of Social Services. Of that, I would say 10 of them are staff from the probation department. There's a variety of individuals in many, many, many sectors and places. It's very diverse, and it isn't just one particular group that's coming. Dr. Gil Stork will greet the audience, and in addition to that, we will be providing continuing education units to those from the Board of Behavioral Sciences and also for registered nurses. And the individuals that are calling the office every day are very, very excited to be able to take this next step, because there is a lack of real true understanding of what we say, what is trauma-informed practice. There's the individual approach, and this is what I've learned, how we treat the person in front of us, but there's also the community impact. How do we as community members, how do we go back to our offices, how do we go back to our organizations and our institutions and make sure that this type of awareness is integrated into our work? So anyway, that's what I have to share with you tonight. Is if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer more if you would like.
Do I start down at this end? Scott, do you have any questions?
Talk to me a little bit about your funding, how you get it, what organizations, people, however, you know, sort of percentage split among them.
Sure. The people on the very first slide that I shared with you all provided a sponsor fee today. That's why they're up there. The folks that are on the very first slide I showed you have dedicated their time to sit in a planning committee to develop this since September. There they are. So, for example, the Public Health Department, Sandy Miskovich, who is the maternal child adolescent health manager, she has steered this planning team and came back and introduced the concept of having Gabrielle Grant come to speak with us. In addition to that, the Cuesta College community is providing the venue at no cost. So to have a venue that will hold 300 people at no cost is quite exceptional, as we all know. The other partners are providing not only a sponsorship fee, but they're also spending time on the planning team, giving their guidance and their support, and providing just all hands on deck the day of the event. So when we're out there in the morning preparing for the audience to come, they're all providing their time. And of course, the County of San Luis Obispo was very, very generous with a sponsorship fee of $1,000 to offset the cost for this event.
What's your year-to-year funding operational? What revenue sources do you have that way?
Well, for the Center for Family Strengthening, which is a nonprofit organization that's been here since 1987, we were originally formed back in the day. Anybody know Dr. Louis Tadone? Of course, there's several people I'm sure who do. He was one of the original citizens or stakeholders that convened a group around the concept that there was poor coordination and communication between agencies and the community about child abuse and neglect issues. So in 1987, it was formed as the San Luis Obispo County Child Abuse Prevention Council. And when I joined the group in 2001, they had a budget of $40,000. And today we have a budget of about $350,000. And we do that by writing grants, having some contracts with the state of California through the Office of Child Abuse Prevention. And in addition to that, we have community donations, and we've enjoyed that. Those contributions have gone up quite a lot this year because I've been very aggressive about rebranding the name of the organization, because we were being confused with other organizations. People didn't know what we did. And by changing the name to Center for Family Strengthening, we speak to the core prevention approaches that are necessary to prevent child abuse and neglect. So did I answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. In reading some of the stuff that Gabrielle Grant has written about trauma-informed care, some of what she talks about is that systems re-traumatize. So is there a plan going forward after this training takes place about what that looks like for organizations to implement some of the ideas that come out of that, and what does that look like?
Well, that's a great question, because I think that's what makes this a very unique event. One of the opportunities is that the audience will have a package of, or a portfolio of materials. But one of the pieces in the portfolio of materials, which is quite interesting, is an organizational assessment, a check-off list that each individual can review and assess on their own or back at their place of work to understand where does their organization sit in the system of trauma-informed care. So that is a concrete tool that I saw today. And I'm sorry I can't present it to you today because it's being prepared for copying. And but anyway, that would be part of the call to action that will be towards the end of the day once Gabriella teaches us about trauma and what it is and what it means and how it's different and unique from just a medical model to the one we're going to be talking about on Friday.
Because it really is looking at an inventory list, like you said, of your organization from how clients are served from the moment they walk in to how people answer the phone.
Exactly.
To how your hours of service are provided, to all of that.
Yes.
It's not a program, it's a whole culture.
Exactly, and thank you for bringing and highlighting that out, because that is the intent of the day. And even at the end of the event, we're convening around the next steps or the call to action steps that will be part of the closing remarks of the day, and Gabriella is prepared to lead us in that approach. So it's more of an engaged process as opposed to us just sitting there watching her talk to us.
Is there, do you have an idea of how many people of those 300 are individuals that are frontline staff, the people that are answering the phones, the people that
are... That's a good question.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but you know, I will get a better sense of that on Friday, because that is a very significant part of the work. It isn't just about managers and directors, but you're right, it isn't being inclusive of all of the folks that are the first person you see when you come through the door. You know, for example, a probation department.
Absolutely.
You come in through the door and it's not the friendliest place, right? But it can, the person behind the window can be prepared to work with whoever's coming to them in a different way, possibly. And that's not a comment about our probation department. Whenever I go, I'm treated very nicely, but you know, I'm there as a community stakeholder. But you know, those who do come that are under stress, that have suffered severe trauma, and all the family members tied to that, that's important to know.
Right. Okay, thank you.
No, thank you for asking. I really appreciate that.
I have a few questions. Now, you said there's 300 already, so there's no space available if someone wanted to register now?
For Eugene, I would make mountains move, and I would make it work.
And there was no... Yes, we have another program going on, unfortunately. I didn't know. Anyway, the cost for registration, did anybody have to, you know, individuals have to pay a cost?
Yes, it's $40, and that includes breakfast and lunch, or a light snack in the morning and lunch, and it was $55 for those who required CEUs from the Board of Behavioral Sciences or registered nurses.
Yeah. And the last question is, is it possible to have it recorded so that other people could access that? I know sometimes at the community colleges, they have the ability to do that.
Thank you for asking about that, because Quested does have that capacity, and I'm waiting to hear from them today, or tomorrow, I should say, because they were confirming about how that would happen. And I'm just, you know, assuming it's going to all work out really well, because They already have the camera set up. They already have the ability to do the teleconferencing up to the North County conference or campus, and that works very well, and I've experienced that. So anyway, that's my goal tomorrow, to make sure it's all tickety-boo, as they say.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
So I think between Chris and Jean, my questions have been answered. But just maybe a comment. I think we would be interested post the conference to mm-hmm. look at your registration list and really see how many would be coming from a community approach versus mm-hmm. the individual approach. While we know that there are both of those approaches and they're both very important, maybe where we need to do the most work is actually on the individual approach mm-hmm. rather than the community approach. But that, I think as a commission, that would be something that we would be interested in hearing from you post-conference.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were very mindful of what we would gain from this experience and how we would inform the commission about our process and our progress. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to doing that in whenever we can schedule the time that makes the most sense.
So, and because Jean can't go because she has something else, can I take Jean's place?
Yes, Mary Jean, absolutely.
I actually would appreciate that. Then one last comment, and doesn't necessarily have to do with this program, but on your slides with all the different groups that you work with, the Promotoris group, mm-hmm. how many do we have now?
Oh, thanks for asking about that. So, when we started this, it was probably about 3 or 4 individuals that were really dedicated to it. And when I say individuals, these are Spanish-speaking community members who have no professional tie to any organization or agency. But today we have 45. And on Friday we did another orientation for another 10, which really surprised me because it's been just the Promotoris themselves doing the networking, doing the lead work of recruiting, or I hate to say recruiting, but asking and inviting folks to come. And it has just grown quite quickly, faster than I can even keep up with almost. And I'm just very grateful that I have a fabulous consultant, Erica Rupacaba Heredia, who is I've contracted to help me keep this going along really nicely. And so it's led to many opportunities. And one where I spoke about earlier, where we have 5 Promotoris who have been invited to be trained, and they've been trained as certified interpreters in mental health services. So this was done last June, thanks to the invitation of the Behavioral Health Department. And those 5 interpreters are being processed and gleaned and ready to go to serve in the North County Clinic, in Atascadero, San Luis Obispo Clinic. We just met with those folks last week. And the South County Clinic is where we piloted. I guess that building is moving, or the office is moving down there, so we're making a pause there until they get settled. But it was just, that's a perfect example of how families who are monolingual are coming into a system feeling so upset, first of all, that they're there, or their children are there, or their teenager is there. And our Promotoris helped to neutralize that, normalize the process of getting help, demystifying what mental illness is. That whole has just been a very organic approach. So we're doing what we do just by common sense, but at the same time, we have some common training standard practices that we're doing as well. So individuals who are part of this program understand basic communication, understanding systems, how the county works, how important it is to practice leadership, being able to speak not only at a podium like this, but also being able to sit at a community table and to provide input and to advise community initiatives. So it's been a very
exciting those numbers
part.
Are very impressive. That program has grown very well, and I'm sure you've put a lot of hard work into it. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed your presentation. I think it's going to be a fantastic conference. I just had a follow-up question really to Mary Jean's question. Just, I'm a scientist, so I want to know about data. Do you have mm-hmm. plans to collect data at the conference that you could other than just the participants that are there?
Sure. Well, you know, the evaluation surveys, the satisfaction survey approach is always practiced. And as far as data, that's always the most underfunded approach in any system that I've been part of. Everybody wants you to do it, and we do the best we can, like through the evaluations for the CEUs. We capture that, what, how much, you know, their knowledge, how much they've learned, how their behavior or their attitudes have changed about it. But we'll use that as a baseline going forward. And systemizing that data is it's not so much a challenge, but we have to be mindful of it. And thank you for bringing that to my attention, because it doesn't make sense to go ahead and not take what we're learning from this process and to be able to speak from a year from now saying, look, we trained 300 people. Yes, they said they really liked it, and they had their knowledge was increased and their attitudes changed, and we could survey them again. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking quickly on my feet here.
No, that sounds great. That's exactly what I was thinking. And I teach at Cal Poly, so we have a pretty big student population that might help you analyze data for free if you are interested.
Yeah, is this through the statistics department?
They do it there. I'm in the biology department.
Okay, well, I work with Becky Otison in the statistics department, and I would love to, yes, thanks for suggesting that, because there's no reason why we can't use the Cal Poly sector and use their generous brains and their youthful energy to
right.
help
That's
us
what
do
I do.
This. But you're right. I appreciate you posing or making the comment, because it is important that we're mindful about that approach and collecting data and evaluating it as
Great.
We go ahead.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
What could the Health Commission do to help advance your cause?
Thank you. Well, first of all, being invited here is a first step. And I think the Health Commission is a critical body to advising not just our Board of Supervisors, but our city councils and our other Council of Government entity here about what we're working towards. And I think the challenge has always been, okay, what are we going to focus on? And if we could come back to the Commission and report out not just on the findings of our event on Friday, April 15th, but actually talk about where we're going with this, and how you could help by being ambassadors to it, to any of the Board of Supervisors and any city council members, and hearing the business community, hearing you promote these kind of practices would be very, very helpful. But again, I think what you need from us is not a canned speech, but sort of a platform that we could all get behind that would make it really easy for you to communicate with your community and your constituents about this sector. So,
well, I think that would be a great idea to have you back, mm-hmm. and with some concrete requests for how we can help you.
Super.
We have a format that sometimes has lapsed into a one-and-done presentation. Mm-hmm. And it would be really nice to follow up on something. This sounds very worthwhile, and it might really mesh with what we're charged to do.
Okay. Well, I look forward to making that happen. And I promise we will come back, and we will take the next step with your support.
Do you have any additional questions, Susan?
I just have a question on that, because I that kind of leads us into a place that the Health Commission's been looking at the past few months, and that's a project for education. And it seems like this might be an opportunity for us to take a look at something that we could help with. My other comments is, what about the medical community, particularly like in the emergency rooms, because they get a lot of traumatized homeless people in really tough situations, and I know they're not easy to deal with, mm-hmm. But I get a lot of feedback. So have they been included in this, or is this maybe something that's been talked about in a direction that we might go? And then you did just mention policymakers. That was my mm-hmm. next question, was some of the city councils and educating them. Do we have some of them and our Board of Supes and behavioral health board members and some of the other policymakers in the county invited to this.
And I would like to say that we did open the invitation to our policymakers, and we're fully aware that it's a real challenge for folks that are working at that level to make every event and every invitation that they get. But with that said, we will be communicating with them directly about not just what we're doing right now and what our findings were, but we will create an avenue of communication that will keep them informed of the progress of how we of what we learned and what we believe, because we have the local knowledge, we have the local expertise. We don't need to ask for folks to come out of the area to help guide us in this as much as it is take the framework that we're going to learn about on Friday and start creating that platform or that foundation that's easy to understand and easy to integrate into whatever the organization is. For instance, coming into this building, you know, it's maybe a little intimidating for folks to come into a building this large and who's greeting you and who's what that kind of concern that people might have. Even coming before the commission, it sets people off, you know, to be traumatized a little bit when you have to speak before a body of people that you don't know. And so, but getting back to the comment or the question about the hospitals, that will be that one of those next steps. And the hospitals are partners in many, many ways in this community, and our community health centers are partners. But getting it around the trauma-informed theme is going to be the next step. And so, like back in 2003, when we brought Dr. Ira Chasnoff in here, and we talked about fetal alcohol syndrome disorders, and we talked about the issues of prenatal substance exposure, that got a lot of people's attention, and we still continue to work very concretely in the community on this issue. But for this would be a whole new ball game. And I think the partners that I showed earlier on the slide and the individuals that I mentioned earlier who are representing those organizations are committed to creating that framework and how we can come back to the commission with a game plan and how we can concretely and strategically inform our legislators and also directors of major organizations and keep that message going.
I just, that reminded me of a comment, and possibly if Dr. Vincent Folletti is still alive, maybe when it comes down to the medical community, he might be someone we can bring back again. We've mm-hmm. had him here twice, I don't know how many years ago, mm-hmm. when this was first introduced, and before, this is the adverse childhood effects study from Kaiser Permanente, and that's some data that you can really dig into that's just been amazing, and I think has been a lead off to a lot of this change, and maybe we could bring him back.
Absolutely, and I think that there's been a large pause between the ACE study, the Adverse of Childhood Experience study that was published back in the early 2000s, and it still continues to be quite the platform, and I think it's an opportunity to not only come back to the commission and about the trauma-informed slow findings, and also have opportunities to continue to educate ourselves locally here, also to understand what are those practices, what are those policies that we can influence here in our county. I mean, obviously, we have a no smoking ordinance, and I was living here back in the day when all those people organized around no smoking, and look where we are today. We have a no plastic bag ordinance, and I think those were accomplished, and I think an opportunity to accomplish a broad policy framework around how every organization in this county functions around trauma-informed care is a next step. And that's what the vision of the group that we spoke about earlier would like to see happen.
Well, I'd like to thank you again for coming and giving a wonderful presentation.
Oh, thank you.
And we do look forward for you coming back. And this is something that we can investigate within our education committee.
Great.
Thank you.
I look forward to being part of it. Thank you.
Okay, Next on the agenda is the Health Agency Public Health Report. Dr. Bornstein.
Good evening. My voice is a little less than optimal, but I will do my best. And thank you, Lisa. I'm sorry to say that I didn't catch the beginning, but I will absolutely watch it on video. So that's available to anyone who came in partway through to watch the proceedings here on the county's website. But I was very much interested in this, and sorry that life happens. A few things I just want to tell you about. I think I had maybe previously told this group, and I'm constantly trying to get the word out in the community amongst physicians, that the CURES system, which is where a provider can look up the prescription history of an individual patient around controlled substances and see where they've gotten medications and from whom and how often and how many, that system was to be mandated as of January 1st, that providers would not be able to write a controlled substance prescription without being registered in the system. That has gotten pushed back to July 1, but the good news is that it is coming with an updated, more user-friendly version of the database. A lot of providers complained that they had a hard time actually making use of the system. So now it's a carrot and stick approach. You have to register in order to write your prescriptions. Unfortunately, it doesn't mandate that you have to use it, but at the same time, they're coming out with a 2.0 version. A related note, some of you may have seen, it's been in the media in the last few days, a cluster of overdose cases with fentanyl on the streets. It has always been present, but it seems that it's ramping up. And so we have gotten the word out to providers through our Opioid Safety Coalition. Safe Prescribing Action Team is one of the opioid groups that is the ER docs that you were talking about. So they certainly know substance use in their facilities, and it's always good to give them, and certainly law enforcement is on top of it as well, a heads up about looking for this. At the same time, we are getting naloxone, trying to push that in the community. Rather not use it, rather not find new ways for folks to OD, but it's something that's definitely in our consciousness right now. I also want to respond. I don't remember which of the commissioners had asked at our EMS presentation a couple of months back. We told you about all the great work that's being done in community-based, hands-only CPR, and there was a question posed if we have a master calendar, and I promised to look into that. We do not. The only particular place that is calendared every week is the Thursday night farmers market, and they do a lot of great business there. But we continue to have thousands of people not calendared out months at a time who in various community venues take advantage of the training opportunity for hands-only or bystander CPR, as it's sometimes called. Last week was, I'm sure you were all wearing your public health colors, if I knew what those were, but it was National Public Health Week all last week, and sometimes our staff who are toiling away don't get the recognition that they should, and we had a very nice breakfast for them this year, invited all of our public health staff. It occurred to me as I put this on my agenda to tell you about that staff really, I think, felt appreciated, and it was a nice event, that next year we need to invite the health commissioners, because I know that's an opportunity for you all to engage with our staff. You hear from certain select people who are don't run screaming from the idea of getting in front of a microphone and a podium, but there's lots of good folks just doing a ton of different type of community work, so we'll make sure to include you. And then lastly, one of the commissioners reminded me that, and I don't have all of the details yet, but Outside In Slow, which is our climate change and health awareness effort that has been continuing ever since it was piloted a couple of years ago, has now won an award from the National Association of County and City Health Officials, and our Kathleen Carley will be receiving that award at the national meeting that's taking place in July in Phoenix, which is where they send public health people to get good rates. But anyway, lovely air-conditioned hotel, which goes counter to, you know, saving fossil fuels. But anyway, so we are going to continue to get the word out wherever we can, and having this kind of recognition is really a lovely way of doing that. Hopefully we'll get it in the new county newsletter, in our public health bulletin, and ongoing community efforts. And that is my entire report.
Do you have any comments about the Zika virus based on, I saw stuff in the news today.
Okay, so what did you see today that was new and different?
Much worse than they anticipated from the CDC.
Yeah, so Zika virus is continuing to spread unabated in Latin America, Caribbean. It really is a pretty non-threatening virus unless you are pregnant. So again, only 20% of people become ill, and ill is a kind of low-level flu-like presentation with fever, joint pains, rash. The numbers of microcephaly, small heads in infants, is continuing to emerge. The other health effect that is now increasingly being recognized as most likely linked to the virus is Guillain-Barré syndrome, an autoimmune syndrome that can have longer-term effects, usually short-term paralysis and hypo, decrease in neuromuscular use, primarily in the lower limbs, but it can work its way up to the body. There is a lot of concern that especially in coastal areas, southern coast of the United States, that it's only a matter of time that the virus will move up our way. It's already in Puerto Rico, which is not that far off our coast, and that there are vector mosquitoes in many of those areas. Those mosquitoes exist in about 12 counties in California, and there's ongoing surveillance. But I was with a number of health officers, our Southern California region, get together now and again, and we had a lot of discussion about it. It included the director of communicable disease for LA County, who has done decades of international work and been around for a very long time, such that he's a historian of vector-borne disease. And something new I learned was that in order for the United States to rid itself of yellow fever, there were actually surveillance activities that went door to door, and people were fined if they were found to have mosquitoes of the right type, the yellow fever mosquito, in their house. It's as with many things, the lower income folks are suffering more. They don't have, you know, they don't have the insect repellent. They don't have always intact screens. They don't, you know, have gardeners who clean out the little water gullies in their properties. A variety of reasons that, and so looking at the United States, especially along some of the coastal areas that are probably some of the highest risk folks, we have to be prepared. President Obama has gone on record that this is one of his top priorities, and has asked CDC to they've dedicated a large sum of money for response planning. I hope it won't be like West Nile virus, which was. I actually lived on the East Coast when that hit. I got to California shortly after it came here, and the impression was that it was a very slow moving tidal wave. That each year, you could see there was. There were cases. First, it was just the East Coast, and then it moved to, like, you know, Ohio, Tennessee, Texas, and you could actually watch the progression each year. And some are thinking the same thing may happen with Zika on a shorter timetable, that we're just going to sort of watch it come in. But very, very hard mosquitoes to control. They need very little water to replicate, and... So that's the Zika story.
So is anything being done to educate people about those things that you just talked about screens and water and some of those? Is there an educational campaign being done at all?
Yeah, at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, I don't remember when we last did it, but we usually seasonally, and this year we highlighted Zika as a reason to put out the, you know, ways you can protect yourself from mosquitoes. Usually we say dawn and dusk. These are daytime biters. We don't believe that we have them in our county. We do have some surveillance in our county, and we are not one of the 12 counties listed by the state of California for those particular mosquitoes, but nonetheless, it, you know, whether it's West Nile or other types of vectors, or potential spread of the mosquito over time, there is a fair bit of education going on. People tend to tune in when they need to.
Enjoy this. I saw the list of proposed ICD-10 codes for 2017, and Zika virus is right there as a new code.
List. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yes.
Yes. Penny, when you talked about the CURES prescription drug system, was that statewide, nationally, or county?
That's a California system, and I have a feeling the C of CURES, it is an acronym for something. It might be California, but I can't remember the whole acronym, but it is a state system.
Okay, thank you. Now I guess we'll move on to the health commissioner updates, and I'll start with my report. I did attend the Adult Services Policy Council meeting, and there were three speakers. There was a speaker for the Jody House, and then Cap Slow, they were talking, Grace McIntosh talked about this needs assessment, and it's real important to have community input. And then Biz Steinberg talked about the Action for Healthy Community Survey. And that's, I do believe we had some input as far as anybody that knows key informants in this population, the older adult or anyone with disabilities, if you could get those names to Fred Monroe or to Biz, then they can make sure that they call them and ask them questions about the needs in the community. So it's one way of making sure that those agencies collect information so they can provide the services. And that's my report. So we'll start down at this end if you have any report.
No report.
I wanted to mention that the California Coalition for Compassionate Care, I think I mentioned it before, they granted some money to the San Luis Obispo Coalition for Compassionate Care to reach out to faith leaders in the community with regard to helping learn ways of communicating with members of their parishes, members of their communities about advanced health care directives, and also about really how to talk with their members of their community at end-of-life kinds of discussions, because those are difficult conversations to have, and just being trained with really a firm understanding of their faith doesn't necessarily open the ability to be able to have some of those very difficult discussions. So there is a training that is going to be offered at no cost. It's on April 15th. It's a collaboration between the San Luis Coalition for Compassionate Care, Dignity Health, and Hospice of San Luis County. It's offered at Dignity Health at French Hospital's new Education for Learning Center. Is that correct? It's from 9 o'clock to noon. There is a panel of speakers that come from backgrounds of ministry and also from healthcare. There are tools that are going to be provided to members of healthcare communities as well as faith communities in how to open those discussions, and it's a first step. So we encourage people to come and attend. The registration is online at Partners in Caring at Eventbrite. And what I'll do is send out, it is available online. Anybody can look it up at Eventbrite, but I'll send it out to the commissioners as well. And we've been trying to send it out to faith leaders and to all of the health organizations and nonprofits as well.
So I attended FEPAC, which is the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Advisory Committee, along with Dr. Bornstein, last week. We had a very full agenda, talked about a lot of stuff, and it's very reassuring that our county is preparing and prepared for many, many things. And some of the stuff's really pretty interesting. Dr. Beebe, who's lab director, was talking a lot about the lab and some of the new techniques they're doing. I'm just going to give a very abridged discussion, but expanding some of the panels they're doing, one of them being a combination GI and respiratory panel where they can isolate. If you thought you were having some sort of a terrorist activity, isolate something like 23 agents in the period of an hour. And is that right? Am I getting it right? Watching Dr. Bornstein. Also, so I mean, that's pretty neat, you know, having been through some stuff. Also, he did remind us that Ebola's not exactly gone, and there are people still being monitored for exposures, and he's very excited they're going to be doing some drilling with some of the local hospitals to continuing to keep us in a readiness state. You know, a lot of it's kind of gone off of the public discussion, been replaced by the Zika, but, you know, we're still remaining staying vigilant on that. The other thing, one of the things Dr. Bornstein talked about was that we're still having some late influenza here in the county. That's just kind of interesting. It's a little later than usual. EMSA, EMS Week, Emergency Medical Staff Week, is May 15th through the 20th, so if you know any paramedics or EMS people, you should congratulate them. And then the emergency prep group is working on their grant funding, and think they're going to get a little bit less money this year. They don't really know what they're going to be getting. But some of the things they're going to be using it for is some training, Chempak training, as well as getting some trailers to contain tents and supplies for an emergency they have to set up to sustain people. Also, let's see, there was quite a bit of discussion about the potential strike at Cal Poly, and which is a, we don't really have to talk about that anymore. Yeah. Well, it was very impressive, though, to look at all the things you don't really think about in preparing for something like that. It's not that you're worried about the people that are striking, but you're worried about people coming in from outside of the county, and we have students that are out of school, and lots of things that I hadn't really thought about. And then the last thing is we had a presentation on healthcare service recovery assessment, which was kind of interesting, where you're looking at potential things that could happen, and the things were, we looked at a pandemic, an electrical failure, or water contamination. So we reviewed a list of, we had to prioritize what we would do first, and so went through this whole group and looking at what would be the top priorities, because you can only do so many things, you know. I mean, the examples being assessing and evaluating a facility for recovery and resumption of services, prioritization of healthcare services, agreements with other facilities, restocking of inventories, transportation. These are all the things that, you know, if you got cut off from somewhere, you have to look at them all and you have to figure out what you do first. Anyway, it was a great meeting.
So first of all, I went to the Oral Health Coalition in Claire's place this month, and I brought you all a pack of stuff, literature, and not the whole report, but a press release that came out of the Little Hoover Commission, a study that they recently did where they looked at our DentaCal program and found that it was troubled, I believe, is the word that they used. And then a subsequent article out of one of the Sacramento newspapers that addressed some of the issues that we found there. But I thought you would all find it very interesting because we had such an engaged discussion a couple of months ago with our speakers on oral health. There is, which I believe is probably a result of the investigation by the commission here, there is some money that will become available, funded jointly by, I believe, both the state and some from the federal government. There's $740 million that will become available for some programs to be put together. And the Oral Health Coalition is looking at there are four different areas, and one of the area is innovation, for the lack of a better a term here. So they're looking at how they might come up with some things and perhaps apply for some of that money. One of the things they spent a little bit of time talking about was the virtual dental visit, or dental health. What would be teledental, right? I was going to say telemedicine, but it's teledental. So I think we can probably see some things coming out of the coalition as they start to look for those things. And I also left you all a brochure about one of the upcoming fundraisers for the Tolosa Children's Dental Center. This is one of their annual fundraisers. It's in June at the San Luis Country Club. If anyone's interested, you can register on the back of the flyer to attend, and I'm sure they would appreciate your support. Then the CBO Preventive Health Grant Subcommittee, we've
basically finished our work for this year. Our funding recommendations have been turned in as part of the budget process. The Board of Supervisors will consider our recommendations on the last day of the budget hearings, which is in June, around the 14th or the 15th or something like that. And once we get those, the final distribution, I will bring you the results of that. But we had a fairly large number of applicants this year, and we tried to fund absolutely everything that we could. And that's it for me.
So I'm the liaison with the First Five Commission. The commission continues to, they're getting close to the end of the strategic planning process, which has been going on for several months now. In the background of all their discussions is the concern about diminished funding, particularly with decreased tobacco settlement money. And they're working hard on transitioning some of the funding that they have traditionally provided. In terms of their overall strategic plan, far as I can tell, they're just tweaking their basic approach, which I think has been very, very carefully considered, but maybe a little movement toward emphasizing really early childhood, particularly in terms of screening for developmental, behavioral, or social delays, incorporating that with family education programs. And then it's come up a number of times this evening, working on finding ways to improve availability of oral health care for children. No solutions yet on that one. That's a tough one. But it's getting more and more emphasis. And I think that's about it. Would you want to add anything, Penny?
Yeah, since everyone's announcing meetings, actually Tuesday evening, April 19th, First Five is holding its annual Hands on Heroes event, and one of the heroes was named tonight by Lisa Frazier Erica. Well, not bad in names. Anyway, there's a number of folks who will be getting awards from First Five at that event. I think there may still be seating available. It's a dinner and a nice evening at, oh, I'm pathetic. Anyway, yeah. So if you want to know more details, slowfirstfive.org, April 19th, Hands on Hero.
Yes, I have a report from the Homeless Services Oversight Council, and there's a lot of exciting movement beginning, and one of the first things is at the state level, apparently they've shifted some money around, and there's an unexpected, and it's maybe one time only, but it's some emergency services grant money that's come down to some of the different counties, and we are one of them. And actually today in the mail I saw that the RFP request for applications or for proposals has been put out for that grant money. That was something new, and it happened really quickly over just the last couple months. I think we found out about it in February, and the county had to decide if they were going to participate and put everything together. So that's exciting, especially that the state found some new money. And then we're really looking at, because it takes so long to build more housing, we're looking at different ways. I know there's been talk about the tiny houses, but we've also had a couple of programs over the last few months on home sharing to help people have an avenue to rent out a room, but have someone that's actually the go-between that kind of meets with the homeowner and the prospective people, renters, and matches them up and works with them to kind of set up their contract. And so that's in the works, and there's actually Morro Bay is kind of taking the lead on that, and there's a group in Cambria and Grover Beach that are interested in looking at these. And we had some speakers that came into the community that have been doing this, to my amazement, the professional groups, there's three or four here in the state that we had that have been doing it for over 25 years and had like zero problems. And it's just been a great, really is wonderful, especially for the homeowners too, that maybe they're elderly and now they're single and they've got extra rooms, and it might be nice to have somebody else there. Whether it's for the companionship, but maybe to help with some of the chores they can't do. So anyway, that's in the works. Also, last week, the Paso City Council voted that they're putting together a North County Homeless Coalition. And it's looking, Steve Martin, the current mayor, has gone to all the mayors in the community that all gave letters of support, and they're going to the state to see about the vacant youth authority that has, it's a wonderful opportunity to put together a homeless campus and have a lot of the resources there. So they voted to go ahead with that and start that movement. And so we'll have more to report later on that. And then tomorrow, the Board of Supes meeting right here, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., their agenda, their hearing is on their update on the 2016 action plan for homeless services. So people can tune in and watch that and get updates for what the county's doing. That's it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes?
If I may redeem myself for a moment. The power of Google. So first five, the number five, the word first, fiveslow.org is the website to get more information. But the event, 5 to 8 p.m., Hands-On Heroes and Champions of Youth, is taking place from 5 to 8 p.m. next Tuesday, April 19th. And I misspoke on one of the awardees is a colleague of Erica's. It's Mary Lou Gomez, who's the school readiness coordinator at Georgia Brown. And she will be receiving an award along with several others who I'll just name the categories. Lactation consultant, the master teacher at Cal Poly's preschool learning, Genesis Family Child Care, and a volunteer at the Oceano Library. So lots of folks doing lots of good work in the community are going to be honored at that event.
Thank you. Now moving on to committee reports. Is there a budget committee report? Legislative? I do believe that the education Community Education Committee will be meeting on the 26th of this month. I can't remember exactly where we're meeting. Where are we meeting, Jean?
Of the public health department with Jennifer Shea. She's a senior public health analyst, and we'll be discussing health commission messaging, basically brainstorming on ideas and methodologies for becoming more visible.
Very good. Thank you. And then the nominating committee, do you have something to add?
Well, we do have an opening on the commission. Commissioner Pope has resigned. So we're working on filling that spot. I think we probably will be able by next month to bring a recommendation before the commission, which will then move on to the Board of Supervisors. We're sorry to see him leave us, but hopefully we can fill that position soon.
The next item on the agenda is prospective future items. And the May meeting, I do believe that we are going to have a representative from the Vet Center be joining us, and CAPSLO, Supportive Services for Veteran Families. and another speaker coming to talk about Pause for a Cause. So I think that's the plan for the month of May. And then in June, I am looking at, or I've made contacts with, I guess the county person will be talking about cancer clusters, and I'm going to be investigating maybe having someone from the tumor board come and talk about their what they do, and the resource centers that are available here in our county. So is there anything to add to that? I know we'll be talking about future items probably at the meeting on the 26th. Anyone have anything else they'd like to mention? Okay, I guess we're now at the adjournment phase. Is there anything we want to speak to before we adjourn? Yes? You have something?
Nope.
Okay. I guess the meeting's adjourned.